Did you feel, I mean, you've lived in a very unconventional world your whole adult life.
Well, I and my whole life as a child.
That's
if
what
I
I was
may say
wondering.
so.
Yeah.
My parents were extremely unconventional, and I was brought up in a delightful bohemian manner. So I sailed right into swinging London with no problem.
What, tell us a little bit about the delightful bohemian manner that you were brought up in.
Well, my father was a real idealist. After the war, he formed a commune, not like a 60s commune, a 50s or even a 40s commune, more like an Iris Murdoch kind of thing. And the purpose of this place, which was called Braziers Park, was to change the world and to teach people, only Europeans, he couldn't really go further than that, to live together in harmony so that war would never happen again. And that was my father's mission. My mother was also an idealist in a way, but not quite as serious as my father. And she didn't really like it at Braziers Park. She didn't like living in a commune. And it split up, and it, she thought she was marrying an English gentleman, you know, and she thought she would have a much more conventional life. She didn't realize she was marrying this wonderful world-class loon.
Did you live on the commune at all?
I used to go at weekends. I had a wonderful time.
What was it like
as
a
a
girl?
Farm. There was a farm. I watched calves being born. I had a friend who had a pony. I didn't have anything to do with the commune. I was just out from dawn till dusk.
And did your father talk to you about the philosophy behind it?
No, not till I got much older. And then I found it very interesting. You know, he used to give courses on Alexander Pope and things like that. Before I wrote my book, he did a course specially, really, for me, on the writing of autobiography.
You're kidding.
No.
How did it affect the writing of your 1994 autobiography?
Well, he really helped. He was a really great teacher, you know. He was a professor at Bedford College in London. He taught me a lot. I learned in his course about autobiography that it was absolutely essential to put dialogue in, or it got very boring.
Well, that's always interesting to me because I read so many autobiographies and I always think, who has the memory to really remember what somebody said and what you said back?
Well, you can't really, but you can make a rough guess. I wrote it from my perspective. I don't put thoughts and feelings into other people. I wrote about me and what I felt and what I did. And I remember everything. And I remember how I felt. I remember my motives. I remember what I did and what I thought of things I saw around me. And in fact, I was very, very hard on myself. I realize that now. But I didn't see any other way. Any other honorable way to be.
How far away does the really hard time seem to you when you were homeless?
Seems like
and...
a long, long time ago. Really.
And
I know I was very lucky to get through it. It was obviously something I needed to learn. And in a strange way, I learned some very positive things, you know.
Have you asked yourself why you think you survived?
No.
Why so many other people don't?
I guess no junkie dies in vain. Everybody who dies, for each one who dies, another survives. I don't really know why I survived. I tried incredibly hard not to, but finally I did accept that I had to survive, and there must be some reason why I had to survive, and I might as well accept it. And when I did that, everything got a lot easier, of course.
You occupy a kind of unique spot in pop music now because, you know, you were a teenage pop star, but what you're doing now is somewhere
a pop
between...
pop princess,
yeah. What you're doing now is a kind of... What you're doing now is a kind of hybrid of cabaret and theater music and pop and rock. And
I don't really do cabaret. I do rock and roll. Sort of. With a lot of drama. I don't know what I do. I do what I do, you know.
And if you don't mind my mentioning your age, is that...
I don't mind. I've just turned 58.
Right. And, you know, back when you were starting in the 60s, there still was the sense of, what do rock and rollers do when they get older?
Well, I didn't think I would.
You didn't think you'd live that
long?
No
way. I thought a broken English was the end. I thought after that I would die. You could have knocked me down with a feather when I had to make another record.
And Broken English was, 1979?
Yeah.
Right.
I thought that was it. I thought, go out in a blaze of glory. Off you go.
Before the interview started, you mentioned to me that you stopped smoking about three weeks ago.
Yeah.
And why did you decide to stop after all these years?
Well, I've been wanting to stop for about a year because I've got the beginning of emphysema. And my mother died of emphysema and alcoholism. So I kind of didn't really want history to repeat itself. So I did everything I could. I went to a hypnotist. I read Alan Carr. I did all these things. Nothing worked. Then just before I came to America, I got really bad bronchitis. Really bad. And I could not even think of smoking. So I didn't. I stopped. And I'm using a patch, of course. I'm beginning to not need the patch now. It's sort of getting easier. I've done this whole interview without a patch. They make me sick. They actually are rather like bad speed, patches. But, you know, time went by. The bronchitis got better. I've had some terrible moments of craving. But my doctor in Paris it's very like giving up drugs, you know. They don't last long, the cravings. They last about 5 minutes, so you just find something else to do. You talk to somebody, you put your makeup on, you do anything. You wash your knickers, anything you can think of. And the craving will pass, and then it's gone.
What is the action that you typically take that seems most incomplete without a cigarette?
Well, the one I'm really worried about is face-to-face promo. Because in that, I wasn't using nicotine just as a drug. I was using it as a prop and as a smokescreen.
Oh.
That's going to be pretty scary. I've got to think of something else to do with my hands, and I've got to give myself a smokescreen. Joss sticks? I don't know. A candle? I can't think. I've got to think of something.
Dark glasses?
No. I think people should see my eyes.
So do you feel...
But that's not a bad idea. Dark glasses is a possibility. But, you know, I think that's been kind of covered by Yoko.
God bless her. Do you feel like your speaking or singing voice is changing at all? Or that you're breathing better when you sing?
Well, I've not yet, no. But I think that will come.
Marianne Faithfull, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry. It was a pleasure.
Marianne Faithfull's new CD is called Before the Poison.